Rookie Fever, the show that looks closely at NFL rookie values all year long.
Let's go! Let's get this show going, man.
Hurry up, hurry up!
With Shane Swagger.
The incredible Hawkinson. Hawkinson. Smash.
Smash you!
And Michael Fanero.
You're a closet Philly fan.
Dude, I hear Fly Eagle Fly and it's like nails on a chalkboard.
Because you're like, why am I singing this?
Stop!
The Rookie Fever Podcast.
Dude, seriously, did this change your Twitter handle? Minshew lover or can't get enough Minshew?
We just having fun and we're working, man. That's it, man.
Wait,
hey, now we're awake. Now we're awake. Now we're awake. Now we roll. Hey, now we roll.
Welcome back to Rookie Fever, episode 104. Here, as always, with the feverish Fanero.
What up, Swags?
How the heck are you?
Good, man. Doing all right, all things considered.
All things considered. We have a very special guest here tonight, one of my favorite people to listen to and get information from, J.J. Zacharyson from Late Round Podcast. I don't want to miss anything. I mean, go to FanDuel, NumberFire, Editor-in-Chief. JJ, thanks a lot for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I would say I'm one of the worst people at bringing a guest in. But it's a pleasure to be here. For to have you here.
Thank you.
I'm supposed to be here. You don't have to be.
Yeah, how did we get JJ on the show?
We just asked.
Yeah, good guy. Yeah.
Thank you. No, I'm open to. I love doing shows. I mean, I'm always ready to talk some fantasy football.
And yeah, we've got some fun stuff to do.
Oh yeah, lots of fun stuff.
What's going on at FanDuel right now? Anything fun over there we should be checking out?
We got our content that we're constantly pushing on NumberFire, lots of good stuff over there. But with FanDuel, we've been doing some. I've personally been doing some commentary on Madden simulations because that's the sports world that we live in right now. Is that people build lineups around what happens in a Madden simulation as opposed to what's actually happening in real life, which is nothing from a sports standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm doing a lot of that, you know, over on the FanDuel YouTube channel. It's fun. This upcoming week, we're going to be doing a stream. We do a lot of like what if scenario stuff. And this upcoming week, we got one with Lamar Jackson against Michael Vick. Michael Vick is on the Falcons, and it's a fun little thing where you can
that's awesome.
Plug Michael Vick into your fantasy lineup and hope that he does well.
Isn't it cool how this is
everybody but Matt Ryan?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So it's Matt Ryan is no longer the Falcons quarterback. It's Michael Vick just so we can get that showdown between Vick and Lamar Jackson.
That's cool.
Nice.
I think this whole thing has forced us all to be more creative, you know, like you have to think totally outside the box. The NBA's coming back though soon, right?
Yeah, the end of July or something.
Yeah. Oh, is it that late? Okay.
I'm not quite sure. Maybe it was June. It was one of the J months coming up.
No, but that's some fun. That's some fun stuff you guys are doing over there to keep the product going and fun and interesting. And I heard a lot about it. So it's something people have to check out for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
So recently you talked about league winners and the scarcity of them and where to get them. Do you feel like this year we have any rookie league winners?
I could see it happening towards the tail end of the season as we often see guys kind of break free. I mean, the study that I did was more so on season-long league winners, as in not just season-long fantasy football, mm-hmm. as we usually refer to it as, but guys who are literally playing all season and having a role all season, because I defined it in ways that were based on points per game. Whereas, you know, a lot of rookies might break free later in the season, maybe like a Jalen Reagor or something like that, where, you know, the front half of the season, their points per game averages don't look as good. And it wouldn't shock me at all, especially at the running back position, with all these running back by committees, where they start out slow, some of these rookie backs, but they start to show off their skill set, and some of the running backs that are in that committee just get bumped down a little bit because teams are forced to use, you know, Jonathan Taylor or Cam Akers because they're showing off their talent. To me, Jonathan Taylor right now is one of those players where we're seeing in the media, we're hearing Frank Reich constantly talk about how it's a 1-1 punch between him and Marlon Mack, and how Nyheim Hines is going to have games where he catches 10 passes because of Phillip Rivers' tendency to drop the, or to dump the ball off to the running back position, which is all true. I mean, that in his mind might be true, but Jonathan Taylor is likely the most talented and best running back on that team, and eventually talent just will win out. And so towards the end of the year, especially if they're competitive, I could see a scenario where Jonathan Taylor like really, really captures that backfield and becomes sort of that league winner.
Yeah, it gets harder and harder to find an excuse to pull that talent off the field.
Right, right.
But what about, Finero knows I'm going here, but what about somebody like Swift, though? I mean, because I can't say that Kerryon has proven himself any more than Marlon Mack.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an argument for sure. I personally just like Taylor as a talent more than I like Swift, and I think that if you look at the coaching staff and what those two coaching staffs have wanted to do and what they've proven to do, and where the Colts have had consistently, at least last year and the season before, were using Marlon Mack at a pretty high rate, not as much as a receiver, not as much as we would want as a receiver, but if you look at how the Lions have treated Kerryon Johnson, literally like a 3-game stretch last year where they finally made him a bell cow and he gets hurt.
Yeah.
Right. I think if you read between the lines and what they want versus reading between the lines and what the Colts would want, sure, the Colts are out in the media right now saying that there's going to be a committee, but we've actually seen it more action with the Lions deploying that committee and right. using running backs who are very average in that committee. And so that's what worries me a little bit more about Swift, at least in year one, versus, someone like Jonathan Taylor.
Right. And even with a split of any sort, like, I think, don't quote me, but the Colts had like 2,200 yards on the ground to Detroit's 1,500, like all team. So
situationally, definitely a great spot in Indianapolis with that offensive line.
So go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, I heard this on the Saturday to Sunday podcast. They called them roommates. I like that analogy. Actually, there's a lot of these running backs have roommates. So it's hard to because a running back is the guy that's going to show up in year one, a wide receiver, it's harder to say that's going to be a league winner. It's easier to put your chips in the table to say, okay, one of these running backs is going to be that guy. And obviously anybody who falls, one of these roommates, if you will, one of these backfields that are sharing somebody, Kerryon, who gets hurt all the time, Ingram, who's 30, maybe 31, I think, when the season starts, these guys fall, you got your league winner, and that's impossible to predict. I'm not gonna sit there and say, well, okay, these guys are gonna get hurt based on their age or their, the fact that they've gotten hurt in the past. But that's probably where your league winner is coming from, is the guy that gets rid of his roommate.
Yeah.
And to that point too, it's sort of why I'm more into like a Jonathan Taylor. I mean, obviously you're spending up more for like a Jonathan Taylor than you would be, this is specifically for this year, like in a draft league, than someone like J.K. Dobbins or Cam Akers. But I think it's logical. I think it makes sense, because if you look at what they have and the competition that he has versus what someone like J.K. Dobbins would have and Mark Ingram, who's coming off a pretty strong season, and obviously the Ravens like him in that role, it's just that to me screams they would need an injury of some sort in order for that to happen. But I think you could throw Cam Akers in the same bucket as Jonathan Taylor. I just don't think that Cam Akers, from a competition standpoint, I just don't think that Cam Akers is as good of a prospect. I like him, though, and I think that he could very well be one of those guys.
Yeah, he ended up in a good spot. Are you a Darrell Henderson guy at all? I mean,
not totally. So I was when he was coming out, but I've done studies and research on specifically running backs, but both running backs and wide receivers, but specifically running backs, guys who perform as poorly as Darrell Henderson did his rookie season. The probability that he ends up being a strong fantasy asset is pretty slim. It's not great. And I know that's just looking at, general trends, and you're not looking at the specific situation, which, and in Henderson's case, he's playing behind a guy who, in Todd Gurley, who had historically been this workhorse and a really good running back. And there's differing circumstances, but general trends wise, guys who perform as poorly as he did in terms of fantasy points scored during their rookie year tend to not do very well from here on out, because there's a reason he wasn't on the field. You can't just assume that that they were saving him, or they, you know, that they were not wanting to deploy him right away because they had Todd Gurley and they knew that they were going to get rid of Todd Gurley. It's really, you know, you have to question, maybe he's not as good as we thought. And so that's really the big knock on Henderson for me. I'm definitely more in the Cam Akers camp than I am on Henderson.
So, yeah, and then you invest that draft. I'm sorry, Swag.
No, you're fine.
You address that draft capital. That's another flag, right? It's just like, so if you had red flags going into the offseason, a huge red flag was that draft capital to get, you know, basically a replacement. So, you know, to me, Henderson.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, like, if they felt really good about Daryl Henderson, they would not have spent a second round pick to get Cam Akers.
Yep.
And then what if we throw it over to Damian Harris? Do you kind of feel the same about
that?
Yeah,
I mean, that's
like
a situation.
Belichick would have got him on the field if he wanted him out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a very, very, again, this is just looking at general trends, but there's just a very, very small chance, even smaller for him, mm-hmm. given how he did nothing last year. There's just a really, really small chance that he becomes something at all. Especially the other thing that to keep in mind, too, is that generally the guys who do bounce back after down seasons to start their careers, or both at running back and wide receiver. And you can really see it at wide receiver because it just takes a little bit more time to climb depth charts. But it's because of that fact. It's because guys who are drafted late. So if these players don't have strong draft equity and draft capital, and they don't perform year one, there's a little bit of leeway there. But it's the guys like Damian Harris who had decent draft capital, and Daryl Henderson, who had decent draft capital, who didn't perform because usually guys with decent draft capital get an opportunity of some sort. And so those guys are looked at in a certain way after they get drafted. You know, we spent a third round pick on this guy. He's playing running back, so we know he can make an impact right away. Oh, but wait, he's not going to find the field at all during his rookie year. That's a big, big red flag. Whereas if it's Philip Lindsay who climbed the depth chart, obviously let's just assume that let's assume that him going off during his rookie year happened his second year, let's say. Then if he did nothing his rookie year, it's not as big of a red flag because he was an undrafted guy to begin with. Mm-hmm. So it just takes a little bit more time for those guys to climb depth charts. Like an Adam Thielen is a good example for at the wide receiver position. It takes time for those players to really get involved in an offense. So I'm more concerned about guys like Damian Harris and Daryl Henderson who should have had that opportunity hypothetically and just weren't able to seize it at all.
Yeah.
JJ. So last year we had Scary Terry McLaurin and AJ Brown, who absolutely helped teams. We won't call them league winners, but absolutely helped teams. So we've been talking about the running backs a lot. How about two wide receivers? We won't call them league winners because we got to wait probably, you know, too long. But if you were going to give like a nod to a McLaurin or an AJ Brown like kind of performance, what two wide receivers would you pick out?
One would probably be Michael Pittman, because of the opportunity that's there almost immediately for him in that offense to play the X for them. So Michael Pittman would be one. And I still, you know, a lot of people were down on the CeeDee Lamb landing spot. And I know this is sort of an easy answer because a lot of people, you know, obviously have him as the wide receiver one in the class. But Lamb walking into that slot role more than likely for Dallas, a role that Randall Cobb saw 14-15% of the team's targets there. He had 80 plus targets. I think CeeDee Lamb could exceed that and get in the 90 target range. And what happens if he's as good as advertised and he starts to play well right away? All of a sudden, CeeDee Lamb is a very, very competent fantasy asset for you. And then obviously there's like the fragility aspect of things of, you know, what happens if Amari Cooper gets banged up? What happens if Michael Gallup gets banged up? Sure. Then all of a sudden you're in an offense with Dak Prescott that's become more pass heavy. And CeeDee Lamb is the number two guy. Right. So I just think he's a solid asset regardless of injury. And then if that injury hits, then, you know, he's going to rise and he could be that top 24 ish guy.
Mm. You got me looking at ADP for redraft now, because I think CeeDee Lamb probably goes pretty late in a redraft league. I'm curious how late.
Yeah, I kind of like that too, man.
Right? Yeah, it's got me thinking about that. I'm in like one redraft league.
I mean, like everybody's new in that offense as well. I mean, I know CeeDee Lamb's still the quote-unquote rookie, but Gallup's new to that offense. Cooper's new to that offense. You never know.
He could, I mean, a lot of people a lot of people look at like a wide receiver depth chart and they're like, oh, he's the number three wide receiver on this particular depth chart. But two things are really working in the pass catcher's favor in that offense. Number one, it's not very deep outside of those guys. You have Blake Jarwin who can get some love, and obviously Zeke out of the backfield, maybe a little Tony Pollard. But you're looking at a pie, an overall pie that should be fairly large given their shift in philosophy last year. And Dak Prescott throwing the ball more, and that ended up giving them a much more effective offense. No more Jason Garrett, thank God. So you're now in a situation where you have a pass heavy offense, at least comparatively to the rest of the league, and you have all these weapons. He's not only going to see probably a nice yards per target rate because of the lack of coverage and where he's playing on the field. But I think that a lot of people are overstating the competition in that offense in general.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Anything else, Panera?
I'm still looking for CeeDee Lamb on ADP on Fantasy Pros.
Definitely a double. He's a double digit round guy. I've gotten him in so many mocks and stuff that I've been doing with people. It's just he's in the double digit rounds. There's no downside. And then obviously, like I said, if something happens to one of the other pass catchers, he's all of a sudden going to be really usable.
Yeah, I mean we're essentially dynasty on this podcast, but you know the more we dive in, we're 104 episodes in, we have redraft connotations for sure. And this CeeDee Lamb thing that you just brought up to me is super interesting now because I'm literally still looking for him. Gallup's way above him to start. I'm seeing other names that I feel after speaking with you don't belong above him because you made some really good points. I mean, you're talking about his independent value regardless of injury. And then God forbid there was something that actually happened. I mean, you could have an asset that you picked in like you said, a double digit rounds that winds up being a gem in redraft.
Yeah. Let's go to dynastyowner.com. But when we get back, Finero, what are we going to do?
So we're going to bring back an old gem called rookie performing scoring. We're going to bring rookie potential scoring, RPS, back to Rookie Fever. And we're going to let JJ set the bar for us when we eventually go into the season and adjust these rankings throughout.
All right. I love it. Quick word from our sponsor and we shall be right back.
DynastyOwner.com is the ultimate dream for all sports and business fans. Dynasty Owner is the only patented fantasy sports game that combines Dynasty Fantasy Football with actual NFL player contracts and salaries. No make-believe or demand-based contract or salaries. There's no off-season at DynastyOwner.com. The rookie draft matters. Free agency matters. Every contract matters. We finished our beta season in 2019, and we are now completing the development of our new mobile app for iOS and Android, and it will be ready in time for this rookie draft season. We are opening up our patented fantasy sports game to everyone in 2020, but we're limiting it to just 1,012-team leagues. Win weekly prizes, seasonal prizes, and compete in the chase for the ring. Come join our 2020 season waiting list at www.dynastyowner.com and start your dynasty. And make sure to tell them that Rookie Fever sent you. Just click on Rookie Fever when you sign up. DynastyOwner.com. There's nothing out there like it.
All right.
Check it out.
Finero, I think I'm going to throw it to you first.
And but I found CeeDee Lamb. I found CeeDee Lamb.
Okay. And then we'll throw it. You can tell us about CeeDee Lamb, and then you'll score first. Just for the quick reminder on scoring,
no problem.
I think I'll need it anyway.
Yeah.
And
yeah, no problem.
I think
no
we're
problem.
Starting off with one of my favorite wide receivers for 2020.
We are, yes. CeeDee Lamb is wide receiver 46, JJ, 113. So that puts him about in the middle of the ninth round. So not quite double digits, but that's just ADP now in early June.
Wow.
Yeah, he's down there with Mecole Hardman, Robbie Anderson, Jerry Jeudy's over there with them. Little Sammy Watkins action down there.
Sammy Watkins, wow.
Deontay Johnson, though, I like that. All right, anyway, on to rookie potential scoring. So I'll just give a quick overview. There are three categories that all three of us are going to use a score between 0 and 5. And those three categories are opportunity, predictive performance, and team. Opportunity is strictly based to the roster. So if a wide receiver like CeeDee Lamb was thrown into a perceived opportunity where there are two wide receivers that may be ahead of him on the depth chart, maybe he beats out Gallup for sure. He still has a crowded roster situation, so his opportunity score might be somewhere in the middle. Predictive performance, the second category, is simply how we feel about the player prior to their performance. So we're predicting how good this player is. This is probably based on our pre-draft analysis. This maybe also ties in on how we like the player performing on that particular team, but not in depth enough where we go into the third category, which is team. So if, for example, A.J. Brown last year was perceived to have a horrible opportunity score and team score. He had no opportunity. He had a horrible quarterback, which is part of the team. Team score has stuff to do if, it's a run-first team or they have a bad defense or they're just low pass volume. That's basically your team score. So basically the three of us are going to rank all 10 of these players kind of quickly in these three categories and come up with an average. And this is going to give us a baseline going into the regular season where predictive performance will turn into performance. That probably sounded super complicated.
It helped.
All I care is that you two understand it. I know JJ does because pre-show, I think I explained it better than I just did. and Swag, if you get it even a little bit, I think we'll limp through having JJ on our side here.
Hey, I'm trying.
Okay. So our first player, would you like me to start? I believe that's what you said.
Sure. Yeah. Let's go for it.
All right. So we're going to start with a player that Swags has a hard on for, just so you know, JJ. Laviska Shenault. All right. So Laviska is in a situation where I was looking and he's got a ton of guys that are free agents in 2021. So, and he also has the draft capital being picked in the second round. Even Cole was an undrafted free agent, which, you know, JJ has already pointed out how hard it is to work up that chain. I think he's already lost that ability to do that, even though he showed flashes to me. He's going to have to probably find another team. We have a lot of guys, Connolly, Didi, all gone in 2021. So I think they give Laviska Shenault a great opportunity this season. So I'm going to go ahead and give him a 4 out of 5 because of that high draft capital, because I think the competition has already been kind of overlooked. Chark got a ton of volume based on that competition. There's not a whole lot there. A little bit of a side note. I like Colin Johnson, by the way, the 6'6", 220-pound fifth rounder. It's kind of hard to work yourself up from the fifth round, but I actually kind of see him squeaking
nice
in
little
a little
stash,
bit.
Though. Yeah.
It's a good I mention. Do like him. He's literally known as being a very high skilled route runner, and I think that could help on this offense a little bit, considering that I think they've kind of moved on from these guys that are going to move on next year. So I think he could sneak in a little bit. But anyway, moving on to performance, I think the knock on him a little bit is his route running. Particularly because in Colorado, they used him kind of all over the place. And I feel like he didn't really get to refine his craft. And I think he might need to use this 2020 season to do that. So I gave him a 3 for performance. I think we're going to see flashes, but I don't think we're going to be in love with him this year. I think we're going to like look forward to 2021. And then as far as the team score, I'm going to go ahead and refer to JD's potential target shares by team from 2019. And Jacksonville, surprisingly, had a pretty darn high score to the wide receiver. 64.22% of the plays went to the wide receiver. So I like his opportunity from a team, you know, perspective. So I gave him a 4 there. So to sum up, I gave him a 4 for opportunity, 3 for performance, and a 4 for team, which is a pretty damn good score.
Yeah.
What's that? 11?
Yeah.
No, I gave him an 11. I gave no decimal points either. You're allowed to do that, by the way. Who's next?
So I think I kind of agree with you here. I think it's the only one I gave him maybe a little bit more of a nod was for opportunity, and it's 5. And I know that you don't like to give these guys 5s, but I think that it's going to be him and Shark on the field with the most opportunities, and I think that's huge for everything else you just said here.
All right, JJ, what do you think?
Opportunity-wise, I'd probably go with a 4 for Shenault. I do think that the competition there in Jacksonville is not super strong. Chark's the only guy that we really should be concerned about at all, especially long term. So I'd go with a 4 there. Predictive performance, I'm going to go with more. I'll go more 3. I really like Shenault as a pro. My model really likes him. I just think that he's fairly volatile. There's a lot of different directions that he can go in. It's somewhat of a red flag that when they stopped using him so much in the slot from his junior year to or from his second year to his third year, there's a little concern that his production dropped a little bit. And I'm definitely big in production and looking at things from that perspective. And I do have some worry about what kind of role he plays in the NFL just in general, because he's a guy who, yes, he has the potential to be an AJ Brown type player, that kind of yak impact. But he also could end up being more of a player that they use in trying to get the ball to him in unique and different ways, and more of a gadget guy as opposed to this like every down, 25% target share type player. And then team wise, I'll probably go more along lines of three for Chenault there. I don't think it's, I think his immediate, the immediate team is not looking great. But I think there's at least some potential with some of the pieces there. So I'll just go with a three and just go middle of the road for Chenault there.
Yeah.
We're all in the, like, literally the same exact ballpark. Swags is a little higher on that opportunity. I love that you use the word gadget, because I think that is his scary floor, is that he winds up, or scary downside, not floor, that you know, just because of how he was used in college, it's a little concerning that, you know, they used him in so many different ways that you wonder what that role is. It could be great for the NFL, but not awesome for fantasy. Like, he could be just absolutely wonderful for the Jaguars, and the Jaguars could be totally in love with their pick. But we as fantasy owners could feel like, damn, I drafted him so high, and he's not that guy. He's
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially with rookies. The rookie fever kicks in.
Yeah, that's my fear, because I think Chark is the alpha.
Yeah.
And I got real excited because I own a lot of Chark shares with this particular landing spot, because it felt like he didn't threaten Chark in any way, shape, or form, where there was a lot of people who thought that Jaguars were going to possibly pick a wide receiver in the first round. And that, I thought, would scare the hell out of me as a Chark owner in many leagues. So anyway, I think we're all on the same board.
Let's move to a couple other players before we got to get to rapid fire.
Let's grab one of JJ's real quick so we make sure that JJ's got one. So I want to hear one of his.
All right.
Let's go with Darrington Evans.
Ooh,
yeah.
I didn't think you were going there at all.
Yeah, a little change up.
I love it.
So we'll look at opportunity. I would say, I mean, obviously, short term opportunity is not great, but you have interesting upside longer term with Derrick Henry on the franchise tag. So I'm actually gonna look more and say that it's a three for opportunity because of that fact. And because of what could happen to Henry, I might lean more two there, though, maybe like a 2.5. Mm-hmm. With predictive performance, I think he's more of a handcuff early on. So I'll probably give him a two there because I do think that there's this chance. So I've done a lot of analysis looking at guys who have seen a really high rush attempt mark in 1 year and what happens to them the following year. And it's no surprise that there's a massive drop off usually from guys who see 280 plus carries 1 year to the next, not just because of natural regression, but because, you know, what's baked into that regression, which is like injury and being able to stay healthy, et cetera, et cetera. And what I could foresee happening is sort of what we thought was going to happen this past year. And that's having a true complement, a true Deion Lewis role back in that offense. And Darrington Evans fits that really, really well. My top comp for Evans entering the league was Nyheim Hines. And I think that's the kind of role that he could play. But he could be a Nyheim Hines plus. Really electric player. Did it all at App State. So he's a great player. And he can really complement a big body like Derrick Henry. So, you know, predicted performance, not great. It's 1-2 probably. But I do think that obviously that number rises dramatically if something were to happen to Derrick Henry. And then with team, I'd say it's probably a four with the fact that they did lose piece to the offensive line. The offensive line's still strong. Hopefully Ryan Tannehill can continue what he did last season. And we know the mentality of that team. We know that they want to be a run heavy team. They know that they want to utilize their running backs. So from that perspective, things are looking good. And, you know, I didn't love the landing spot for Evans per se, but I do think that there is at least a path to him being a very fantasy relevant player.
Yeah. All good points. Swags.
Man, I struggle with this one. And I have before you were on the show, so I don't want to stray too far away from that either.
You want me to jump in and give you 2 minutes to think about it?
No, I mean, I don't need to think about it. I just respect JJ a lot, and he makes so many good points.
Mm-hmm.
But man, yeah, I can't quite get on board here. I don't necessarily disagree with some of the scores, though, but I think they'll just ride Henry into the ground, and I think they'll be okay with that. I mean, even kind of like DeMarco Murray, but Derrick Henry was better than him, and we still had to wait for Henry. I agree if Henry goes down, and I agree that it's a run-heavy offense. So I agree the opportunity is probably, I think you said about a 3. I think that's what I'd say, like,
2.5, I believe he gave the opportunity.
Yeah.
So I just struggle. I don't own any shares. I don't know that I will. But I totally hear you, man. I don't know.
I guess
you have so much conviction.
Would you be shocked if Derrick Henry is not a Tennessee Titan after this year?
Not at all. But at that point, is that a sell window? Because then you go into the 2021 draft and then more free agency, and they're probably going to get somebody else if Henry walks. Yeah, I assume.
Yeah, or Darrington Evans, who I think it would matter then how you felt about Evans as a prospect entering the draft, because if Evans flashes this year, like I said, I think that we're going to see Evans on the field. Like I don't foresee a situation where they don't have a complement to Derrick Henry,
right?
Because they physically cannot use Derrick Henry the same way that they used him down the stretch last year, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to be able to see Darrington Evans on the field. And if we see flashes, which he has that kind of capability and ability. I mean, he's incredibly athletic. Like I said, he's someone from a production profile standpoint who did it all. And there's a reason why he had the draft capital that he did. Strong draft capital, all things considered. I don't necessarily think the Titans spend that kind of capital if they don't think that he's going to be involved in that offense longer term. I'm not selling him as a workhorse, right? I'm selling him more as he could be an RB2 type, you know.
Well, like you said, Nyheim Hines plus, or maybe Tariq Cohen.
Yeah, I think he's a Nyheim Hines plus. I think Hines is not someone who's going to warrant a double-digit carry game, but I think Evans can have those types of games, but not be that true workhorse per se. And maybe after Henry leaves, they end up going with more of a split backfield, but I think if Evans flashes, because he should find the field this year, then all of a sudden you have more confidence in your running back position entering the year where you either have to sign Henry to that big deal or just let him go.
Yeah. Finero?
Yeah. So you brought up Deion Lewis. When they brought Deion Lewis, this is the guy that they wanted, and he's young, right? He's a junior coming out of college. This is the guy that they wanted Deion Lewis to be. We all know Henry has hands of stone. He's not somebody that we're worried about in the passing game. So that gives Evans opportunity. So as far from an opportunity standpoint, Henry is the offense. So a 2 is what I'm going to give opportunity for Darrington Evans. And I think that's generous. And I think the 2 is literally from a satellite standpoint. He's going to be a satellite back, gets passing opportunities. If he thrives in that opportunity, which I think he's going to do well in, I'm going to give him a 2.5. Because of that, I think he has the opportunity to flash as a receiver, to spell Henry, and to just look younger and faster or more burst. Mm-hmm. Henry certainly can get quite fast after he gets through the first line. And from a team perspective, I agree, JJ, that you gave him a 4. I'm gonna just dip a little below that and give him a 3.5. So you and I are super close. You didn't officially give him a predictive score. I think you said between 1 and 2. I went 2.5.
I'll say 2. I'll go 2.
Cool. Right. So I think we're right around the same area again with this player, which I think happens a lot. When you combine these three factors, I think you get like a real picture for who they are or who they will be in 2020. And I think this is a prospect that leans heavily on Henry's future. There's no doubt about that. They re-sign Henry, and Evans is an afterthought. There's no doubt about that. He could become a satellite back in this offense, no doubt. I don't think he has Alex Mattison upside, to be honest with you. I don't think he's that kind of guy where, you know, Cook in that high volume offense had Alex, and Alex was a strong satellite back for you. I don't think he has quite that upside. I think he's like maybe, I don't know, 70% of that, which isn't bad, right? So anybody would be happy if Henry gets re-signed to have an Alex Mattison backup in case Henry ever gets hurt. He's a big dude. So, you know, it's I think we're about the same.
Yeah. Who else do you guys want to get in before we get to the rapid fire?
Yeah, I think we only have one more dude.
One more.
Swag, that's up to you then.
Oh, no. Well, we started with Chenault. He was kind of my guy.
That is your guy. Okay. So, you want me to throw one more dude in there?
Yeah.
Because I would love to
JJ
talk about
somebody. Yeah.
Oh, JJ, do you have somebody you're burning to talk about? Because
burning.
No, you go for it. You go for it.
All right. So the one guy I really want your take on is Jalen Reagor.
Ooh, man. Ooh. Interesting.
You get a chubby?
This is a great. He has such a wide range of outcomes. He was my wide receiver 4 in my model. I had him wide receiver 3 pre-draft. I think I have him wide receiver 3 post-draft. Opportunity wise, I'm gonna give him a 3.5. I think maybe I'll give him a 4. I'll give him a 4 for opportunity.
Nice.
I do think that people are overstating his opportunity right away as a first year guy. I think, I like agree. I said earlier, I could see a later in the season breakout for him. Mm-hmm. But when you start building projections and you look at this depth chart, the wide receiver depth chart is filled with geriatrics, and you're not looking at a ton of competition. But we know they run a lot of 12 personnel. We know Dallas Goedert and Zach Ertz are both going to demand a lot of volume. And they'll utilize their running backs too out of the backfield. So I'm not as bullish right away for Jalen Reagor to see a ton of volume. Not only that, but then I guess this goes into the predictive performance. I'll give him a 4 there too for predictive performance. And I think that we might see some time for Jalen Reagor to get acclimated to the NFL level. He might need some time. We know that last season at TCU, he had terrible quarterback play. That was the huge reason why his numbers were the way that they were. But even still, his market share numbers within the context of that. So you're putting those numbers into context. His market share numbers were not very good. My model looks at best season, fortunately, which is why it likes Jalen Reagor. But we might see a little bit of issue with him translating and transitioning. Hopefully we don't. I don't think we're looking at like a J.J. Arcega-Whiteside situation, because separation is not Jalen Reagor's issue, but there could be some growing pains there. But I'm still going to give him overall 4, and then I'll give him a 4 again for team. I mean, you're associating him with a strong quarterback, and the team itself should be consistently a top half offense, and they're you know they scheme well. I'm bullish on the offense in general and the players there, so I will give him a 4 across the board. I like Jalen Reagor a lot.
Holy shit. Holy shit! So Swags, this is gonna be real easy. I would not have said it as well as JJ said it, but they are my scores. Swear to God, straight down the board. I can copy and paste them. 4 straight down the board. He hesitated on the opportunity score. Started with the 3.5. I was 4 straight down the board. Especially if you consider him year 1, year 2. This is a little bit more of a redraft kind of mentality when we're talking about this. So maybe it's skews 3.5, but I'm a little bullish on him. I feel like. Geriatric is the way to put it. You got these guys that just literally can't stay on the field, right? That are in his way. And I also feel like the Eagles are somebody. I live in Philadelphia. I think the Eagles are somebody who feel like they have something to prove with the Arcega-Whiteside pick, right? We can pick wide receivers. We're good. We're fine. Watch this Reagor guy like freaking tear up. He is Jackson. He is an outside wide receiver. He has the speed. He has the ability to play inside outside. I feel like they're going to utilize him to make themselves feel better. I love the 4 there. I'm 4 straight down the board. Swags, where are you?
I'm just enjoying your excitement. It's like when I'm watching my kids watch a movie I'm not totally into, but
I love Jalen Reagor.
But I like watching them laugh and them enjoy it. That's not necessarily how I feel about Reagor. I agree with everything except for opportunity. I'm going to put that at a 3. I think fair that enough. Kind of like JJ fair said enough. At the beginning, I mean, D-Jax is still there. Alshon's there. You've got the two tight ends, Miles Sanders. So I think that I don't think that's a bad thing for Rager, though. I really don't. And I think he'll see the field soon enough. But he's got some nice vets to hopefully learn from. And I think that that could help his career as well.
I like that analysis. It's a little more practical probably, too. I feel like it's going to be one of those things where it's probably, I think JJ mentioned it earlier, he might be one of those guys that winds up being a league winner late in your season. It's not going to be early in your season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You ready for some rapid fire, JJ?
Let's do it.
All right. So rapid fire has slowly turned into a rapid fire family feud, which is crazy. It happened probably because of all this quarantine action that we've been in. You know, a lot of families are forced to spend a lot of hours together, and it kind of gave me a great idea.
Then we play more games.
Yeah, give us some more. Yeah, and everyone's playing more games. So this is very much Family Feud style. We're going to give you five categories to choose from, which they do not do in Family Feud. They just force you to pick one or play with one. You need the every single one is the top five answers on the board. 100 people are asked a question. Top five answers. Do not judge me. These are the 100 people, so I cannot change their answers. Here are the categories, JJ. You get to choose from. One, advantages from working from home. Two, creature laying eggs. Three, activities that are both scary and fun. Four, reasons you might not respond to a text. And five, name something at home people often run out of.
I am going to go with the working from home one because I've been doing that for 7 years.
Nice.
Yeah, you picked that damn fast. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So I'm gonna actually formally ask the question. And at the end of that question, you're going to try to guess five of the top answers in no particular order. You're just going to try to get all five. That's your goal. Because you don't want to let swag steal it from you.
Yes.
And you'll have one full minute to do five, and I will tell you when you are right. I'll let the wrong ones go to the wayside to give you time. I'm not going to waste your time by saying no. So when you say something right, I'll say, that's one. Number one. Ready?
Yeah.
All right. JJ, advantages from working at home. Top five answers on the board.
Short commute. You got a short commute. Yes,
number one answer.
Okay. You can go number two in privacy.
No. Dang,
that's not one. No. You don't have to wear pants.
Yes, no dress code. Number four.
You can take breaks.
I'll give that to you. Flexible work hours. Number two.
Yeah. You can exercise easily too. There is more. You don't have to have small talk.
No.
You can watch TV if you want to.
Well, that's good, but no. That's a good one. That's a great one.
Blast your music if you want.
No,
to.
No, that's another good one. Not on here.
You can.
These are great.
You can drink.
Oh my God, that should be the number one answer. No.
I don't do a lot of this stuff.
All right. I love the end before the timer goes off. Because I don't do a lot of this stuff, by the way.
Yeah, just to be clear.
This is not me. I'm asking for a friend.
No shower. All right, Swags.
The number three and number five answer is on the board.
No shower.
That's a good one.
Ooh.
All right, JJ, you won.
That's unbelievable.
Answers
that was a good one.
I'm pretty sure Swags has never gotten a steal. With that being said, this is the third time we've done it.
Yeah, but, so what were they?
So, the two that you missed was spending more time with family.
That's fair. I should have said that.
And saving money.
Yeah, those are both fair.
Yep.
I kind of grouped all of those in my mind with the commute.
Yeah, I agree. Right? And honestly, we did.
It doesn't take much to talk Finero into giving the guest points at the end of the show.
No. Look, those three are very separate. They're very, very separate. But in my mind, I just say, oh, I don't have a commute. That therefore, I'm saving time and I'm saving money.
I love the drinking alcohol one. How is that not on here? I don't understand. Like, there's running jokes about like people like drinking alcohol in their coffee mugs and shit like that on Zoom calls.
I'll say the best benefit, though, realistically, is that if you're able to, like if your schedule dictates it and you have flexible hours, is like the midday exercise is such a good day to split up your day. And then you don't have to shower in the morning then. You just shower after the the workout. So much better.
Yeah. I love that.
Oh, why do we have JJ on so late in the quarantine? Like I would have I would have done that early. I love that. Like,
yeah,
because there's too many people skipping the morning shower. If you skip the morning shower, you might not shower. You need to like have a routine. Right. I like that routine though. Skip the morning shower, sleep in, do all the things you really like your core wants to do, which is like be lazy, jump into your work day like 5 minutes before you need to jump into it. But then wake up at lunch and say, oh shit, I need to do something. I need to get active, put your workout in, then shower. Yeah. That's a win, dude. We had you on so late on the
morning. Then get a quick lunch and then you're back at it. You're only taking the allotted time that you would take for that a lot of people take at least for a lunch.
Yeah. Take a couple shots and back to work.
Yeah, right.
No, I did it wrong. That was the way to quarantine. I did it wrong.
JJ, thanks a ton for coming on. Appreciate you as always. Tell them all the great places to find you and anything they should be checking out.
Yeah, so all my stuff's over on numberfire.com from a written perspective, and then I have my podcast, which is the Late Round Podcast, which you can find anywhere podcasts can be found.
Great podcast.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I love it.
Mr. Finero.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's not 60 minutes like ours. It's nice. It's short. It's sweet. It's concise. It gets straight into the numbers. It does not mess around.
It's an easy
listen.
Content. My only complaint would be it's too short, but it's also perfect. You know, you can listen to it so quick, but I'm always disappointed when it's over. So that's all I mean by that.
Because you just want more. That's what he does. He sets it up like the NFL. He doesn't play a game every week or every day.
He is the Feverish Finero. Find him at ArtBarkTV. I am at DFF_swag. Follow at Rookie Fever Podcast.
Jay doesn't know if he's allowed to talk.
Always.
Yeah, I'm not saying anything.
I told him at the beginning, I was like, hey, on the outro this time, like, zip it.